chapter 3. We've again been looking at the relationships of church, and by that we mean, of course, a body of Christ. Last few months we've been looking at our ministry toward one another. We've been taking the phrase one another throughout the New Testament. We want to look at the last two of those this evening, and then if, and I'm not sure if we will, but if we continue the series, we'll look at the pastoral ministry aspect of the church. But tonight will be the last. Well, I shouldn't say that. It may not be. Probably the last, if we get through it, as far as ministry to one another. In 1 Peter chapter 3, in verse 8, it says, "Finally, be ye all of one mind, having compassion one of another. Love as brethren, be pitiful, be courteous." So here we see that we're to have compassion one of another. Compassion is sympathetic concern, and it's really more than that. It's the ability to put oneself in the place of someone else. Compassion is pity. It is to commiserate, to show sympathy toward others. Notice in Hebrews 13, Hebrews 13, verse 3, "Be not forgetful to entertain," and that would be hospitality. But here it is, "Be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unaware. Remember them," this is the, again, compassion is the ability to enter into the position of someone else, to put ourselves in their place. "Remember them that are in bonds, has bound with them." It's one thing to remember someone who's in bonds. It's quite another to remember them has bound with them. That would be compassion. "And them which suffer adversity," physical adversity here is obvious from the next words, "has being yourselves also in the body." That is, in that body of adversity. So from this, we see that compassion is a feeling. It is an emotion. It is the ability to, again, enter into someone's situation, to put ourselves in that situation. We're to have compassion one of another. That means we are to have feelings of sympathetic concern, but again, it goes further than that. We are to put ourselves in place as best we can with one another. But compassion is also something more than that. It's something more than a feeling. It's something more than an emotion. It's something more than the ability to put ourselves in the place of another. Throughout the Bible, we see that compassion causes an individual to act on behalf of others. So that would be the second part of compassion. The first part would be the actual feeling of sympathy, entering into that person's circumstances or whatever. And the second part is compassion causes us to act. It may cause us to pray. It may cause us to do something else. But compassion causes one to act. Notice in Isaiah chapter 63, Isaiah 63. Notice in verse 9, Isaiah 63 and verse 9. In all their affliction, this is speaking of God, he was afflicted. Now that's compassion. In their affliction, he was afflicted. And the angel of his presence, notice, we have the feeling of compassion. In all their affliction, he was afflicted. But we see this led to an act. And the angel of his presence saved them. So he felt compassion. He acted. He saved them. And in love and in his pity, again, pity is compassion. That's the feeling. But then again, we see that it led to an action. He redeemed them, speaking of Israel, and he bore them and carried them all the days of old. So we see this compassion of God, also known as the pity of God throughout the Bible, results in an act. We also have the example of Jesus. On several occasions, we read he was moved with compassion. That is, he felt compassion. He felt sympathy. And that sympathy moved him to do something. Matthew chapter 9. Matthew chapter 9. Verse 36. But when he, Jesus, saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion. Now that says much more than if it simply read he had compassion. It says he was moved with compassion on them. So he was moved with compassion. In Matthew 14, and verse 14, and Jesus went forth and saw a great multitude and was moved with compassion toward them. Was moved to do something on their behalf. Again, he had the emotion of passion or compassion or the emotion of pity, and then that compassion moved him. In Mark chapter 1, Mark chapter 1, verse 41. And Jesus, has reference to a leper, moved with compassion, put forth his hand, and touched him, and saith unto him, I will, be thou clean. So on these occasions, we see Jesus was moved with compassion. Again, you have the emotion, you have the sympathy. You have the ability to put yourself in their place. And that moves you to do something. Then notice in Mark chapter 5, Christ's compassion again is linked to what he did. In verse 19, this has to do with the demonic of Gadara. Remember how he cast out the demons of this man. And in verse 19, in verse 18, the man wanted to travel with Jesus, and the Lord forbids him to do so. Verse 19, howbeit Jesus suffered him not, but saith unto him, go home to thy friends and tell him how great things the Lord hath done for thee. And then notice, and hath had compassion on thee, which is connected with the great things that he has done for thee. In Luke chapter 7, Luke chapter 7, again, his compassion is linked to action. Luke 7, verse 13, this would have to do with the widow woman of Nain. She's about to bury her son. And when the Lord saw her, verse 13, he had compassion on her and said unto her, weep not. And he came. Again, it was compassion moved him, and he came and touched the bier of the casket. And we know the rest of the story. But again, we see compassion. We see an act that follows the compassion. We are to have compassion one of another. Now, you can do something for somebody without feeling any compassion whatsoever. But we are to have compassion. That is, has a body of Christ, has members one of another. We are to, it should be automatic, have sympathetic concern for one another. But again, just like in everything else spiritually, there's to be development, there's to be maturity. Simply having sympathetic concern is not enough. We must also have the ability to put ourselves in their place. Put ourselves in their place. Someone has been told that they're terminal. Most people have no problem feeling some sympathy for that person or for that family. But has that develops, you have the ability to, as much as humanly possible, to put yourself in their place. And again, this goes back to the principle of all ministry, and that is, do unto others as you would have them to do unto you. You can't do that without to some degree putting yourself in their place. So this compassion has the ability to put ourselves in the place of another, and then it acts. Now, as you look at the compassion of Christ throughout the Gospels, you see that he saw a need. He felt something. He then acted on behalf of that need. So compassion must be able to see needs, and then, of course, must be able to feel something concerning the need that you've seen, and then act. Now, again, the act can be many, 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 many things. It could simply be prayer. It could be other things. But compassion sees a need, compassion feels, compassion acts. And in 1 Peter 3, verse 8, having compassion one of another. Now notice, there in 1 Peter 3 and verse 8, the context, this is linked to brotherly love. Having compassion one of another, love as brethren. There's a connection there. They cannot be separated. Have compassion one of another. Love as brethren. Now, the very term brother or brethren conveys the idea of fellowship, conveys the idea of affection. It conveys the idea of support, of comfort, of encouragement. And notice it goes on here, having compassion one another is also linked to commiseration and kindness, because it says be pitiful. That is, commiserate. That's what pity is. It's not just feeling sorry for someone, it's to enter into their situation. Be pitiful, be courteous, which has to do, of course, with kindness. Notice also that having compassion on one another is not dependent upon the personal merit of an individual. It's not dependent upon that. The very next verse, verse 9, in the context of having compassion one on another, love as brethren, be pitiful, be courteous. Then he gives a negative. Not rendering evil for evil. That is, if someone does us evil, what are we to do? Are we to react in kind? Or are we to react having compassion one of another? So this not rendering evil for evil or railing for railing shows us that this showing of compassion is not dependent upon the merit of someone else. It's not even dependent upon their actions. But counterwise, blessing. Knowing that ye are therefore unto called, that ye should inherit a blessing. Now, what is being said there in 1 Peter 3:9, of course, aligns with what Jesus taught in the Sermon on the Mount. If we go back there in Matthew chapter 5, we've read these verses before in this series of messages, but in Matthew 5, verse 44 through 48, and this goes against our nature. This takes spirituality. But I say unto you, love your enemies. That goes against nature. It goes against who we are by nature. Love your enemies. But it gets even harder. Bless them that curse you. That's not our nature. That's not our human nature. This takes spirituality. Do good to them that hate you. Pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you. What he's telling us is that we are to be compassionate. We are to be compassionate. That ye may be children of your Father, that is, that you might manifest that you are the children of God, which is in heaven, for he maketh his sun to rise on the evil and to the good. And he likewise sends rain on the just and the unjust. God is our example. When people say, and we've all said it, because we all, just like the psalmist, we all struggle with this from time to time. Well, I don't understand why God blesses someone so wicked. And that's a dangerous place to go. Because, first of all, to go there, you're not thinking right. Because we're all wicked. And what we're saying when we say that, whether we admit it or not, we are saying, I am more worthy than they are. But you're not. But we've all gone there, and we see, I believe it's Psalm 78, maybe Psalm 73, the psalmist struggled with that as well. But he goes on, he says, for if you love them which love you, what reward have ye? Do not even the publicans the same? That is lost. That's what lost people do. They love those that love them. We're to be above that. So we're to love our enemies. We're to bless them that curse us. And if you salute your brethren only, what do ye more than others? Do not even the publicans so. And then, of course, our pattern is God, as pointed out there in verse 48. But the point is, we're to be compassionate one toward another, and it is not dependent upon how someone else acts toward us. Perhaps someone does mistreat us. Perhaps someone does us wrong. And perhaps you find yourself that it's really difficult. If I'm going to talk to this person, it's difficult. You need to have at least enough compassion to pray for them. And as you do that, if you pray for your enemy, you can't do that with a spirit of malice. You can't continue to do that. So as you continue to pray for your enemy, that compassion, again, begins to develop. And this is what we're to do to one another. And then notice in 1 Peter 4, we'll move on to the next, one another, and the last one. But in 1 Peter 4, verse 9, it says, use hospitality one to another. And we're to do this without grudging. Use hospitality one to another. Now, hospitality has, people get different ideas of hospitality. But it really doesn't matter what our idea of hospitality is. What matters is what God's talking about. Use hospitality one to another. Hospitality in churches today and in our society has come to mean entertainment, having people over at the house. And though that can be included in hospitality, and though that can be a part of hospitality, hospitality is much more than that. It's much more. Hospitality, of course, as we would all agree, conveys the idea of friendliness. Use hospitality one to another, that is, be friendly one to another. That's one form of hospitality. But hospitality goes even further than that. Hospitality is the reception of others. Hospitality is the welcoming of others. So we are to be friendly one to another. But it goes further than that. We are to receive one another. We are to welcome one another. But hospitality even goes further than that. Hospitality also, of course, would include generosity. Just if you have someone over at your house, you give them food, that's an act of generosity. So we see hospitality, you have someone over your house, you certainly aren't going to have someone over your house that you're going to be unfriendly to. If you do, they won't come back the next time. You have someone over at your house, you receive them into your house, you welcome them. That's all hospitality. And then you show generosity. So all of those things are included in hospitality. So when it says use hospitality to one another, that means we are to display friendliness one to another. Again, we're talking right now as a body of Christ. We are to display friendliness one to another. We are to warmly receive one another. You have someone come over to your house, you've invited them to come over, you've given them a time, they have arrived, you do not treat them with rudeness, you are pleasant to them. That is part of hospitality. Pleasant to one another. Again, within a body of Christ, whenever we assemble, we are to be friendly one to another. We are to warmly receive one another, warmly welcome one another, and to be pleasant with one another. We're to be generous. But hospitality also means that we are to be helpful. We are to be helpful. Now, the receiving aspect of hospitality is referred to in a few different places. Notice in Romans 15, verse 7. Wherefore receive ye one another. And we didn't look at that one another because we're putting it together here with hospitality. Receive ye one another. And then it tells us how we're to do that. Or it tells us the model that we are to follow in doing that. Has Christ also received us to the glory of God? Now, did we deserve to be received by Christ? No. So again, our receiving one of another is not based upon personal merit. We are to receive one another as Christ has received us. And again, the responsibility increases within a body of Christ, especially to them of the household of faith. We receive one another as children of God, but especially those that are of the household of faith, there should be a special reception of one another. Romans 16 and verse 2. Romans 16, verse 2, he's talking about Phoebe. He says, I commend unto you Phoebe, our sister, which is a servant of the church, which is at Cenchrea. And he's instructing this church. He says that ye receive her. Ye receive her in the Lord, as becometh saints. That is, it is becoming of saints. It is becoming of children of God to receive one another. And then notice what it says, and that ye assist her. That's help. That's part of hospitality. Receiving, helping. That ye assist her in whatsoever business she hath need of you, for she has been a succor or an assistance of many and of myself also. And then notice in Philippians chapter 2, again talking about this receiving aspect of hospitality. Here he's talking about Epaphroditus. And in verse 29, he says, receive him therefore in the Lord with all gladness. Receive him and do so gladly, and hold such in reputation. You can read about Epaphroditus in verses 25 through verse 28. But our point this evening is that he was to be received. He was to be received with gladness, which of course is hospitality. Philemon, book of Philemon, verse 15. Philemon, verse 15. I don't know why there isn't any book in the Bible I have more trouble finding than Philemon. But it shouldn't be difficult. It's between Titus and Hebrews. But Philemon, verse 15, for perhaps, talking about Onesimus, for perhaps he therefore departed for a season, that thou shouldst receive him forever. And in verse 17, if thou count me therefore a partner, receive him as myself. This receiving, when it says, shall use hospitality one to another, part of that hospitality is the receiving. The receiving of one another. Now, the generosity aspect of hospitality, notice in Romans chapter 12, Romans chapter 12, verse 13, distributing to the necessity of saints, given to hospitality. And then if we go back to 1 Peter 4 and verse 9, we see in the context we are to use hospitality one to another. And then we see the spirit and the attitude of that of true hospitality is to be without grudging. Is to be without grudging. That is, it is to be without ill will. It is to be without resentment. It is not to be done half-heartedly. It is not to be forced. It is not to be unenthusiastic. It is not to be done with any expecting anything in return. You see, we have a society, and it's sad, but we have a society that thinks this way. So-and-so had me over for dinner, now we've got to have them over. No, you don't. That's and if that's why they had you over, that's not hospitality. It's not keeping score. If you fall into that trap, if you ever fall into that trap of keeping score, you're going to be a miserable individual. So we're to do this without grudging. Well, you know, we've had them over five times, and they've never once had us. Let's just wait till they have us a few times. That's not the spirit of hospitality. Again, it has nothing to do with merit. We're to receive one another. We're to use hospitality one to another. And then again, we read the verse in Hebrews 13 and verse 2. We're to entertain strangers. For some have entertained angels unawares by doing so. You never know. When you receive someone, when you welcome someone, when you assist someone, when you help someone, you never really know who you might be helping. So many have entertained angels. So, in summary, the members of a body of Christ, we have a responsibility one to another. I don't think any of us fully realize the degree of the responsibility that we have one to another as members of a body of Christ, as members one to another. Now, we've gone over this many times, but we see that we are to love one another. Everything that we do, this should be the foundation. We are to love one another. We are to serve one another. We have seen that we are to be kind one to another. We are to prefer one another. Now, none of these things are really that difficult if we truly prefer one another. But again, that's not our human nature. That is the spiritual nature, but that is not the human nature side of us. So we're to prefer one another. We're to be of the same mind one toward another. We're to edify one another. We're to admonish one another. These are members of a body of Christ. We're to show respect. That went back to salute one another. It's the way we greet one another. We are to show respect one toward another. We are to bear the burdens of one another. We are to forbear one another, which implies that there are going to be difficulties between people. So we are to forbear one another. We are to forgive one another, which implies that there are going to be wrongs done. But we are to forgive one another. We are to submit to one another. We are to teach one another. Again, not everyone holds the office of a teacher, but everyone has the responsibility to be a teacher. To be a teacher by our actions, to be a teacher by how we live, to be a teacher by how we conduct ourselves. We are to comfort one another. And to comfort one another, again, you can go up to somebody and you try to figure out, well, what can I say that would be comforting to them? There may not be anything. There may not be anything. And it may not be the time to say anything. So how do I comfort them? You pray. And by praying for them, you hope that they receive some comfort. So we comfort in that way. Don't ever feel, because people say the stupidest, for lack of a better word, the stupidest things, and really some of the most unkind things when they feel, I've got to say something. No, you really don't. You really don't. So comfort one another. Sometimes just a touch, just a look. We're to comfort one another. We're to exhort one another. That is, we're to encourage one another. We're to encourage one another. Brother Jones used to preach a message about Baptists devouring one another. And it's very true. We are to encourage one another. We're to consider one another. We're not to speak evil of one another. We're not to grudge one another. As we saw last week, we're to pray for one another. And as we've seen tonight, we're to have compassion on one another, and we're to use hospitality to one another. So how do we do all of these things? How do we do all of these things? Do we just pick out a few? No, it's our responsibility to do all of them. Do we succeed in all of them? Do any one of us succeed in all of them? No. No, we don't. But certainly we ought to strive. We ought to pray that God would help us to do all of these things one to another. So the spirit in which all of this is to be carried out is really illustrated in Jesus washing the feet of the apostles. Notice in John 13, there are so many lessons in what Jesus did that Passover night when he washed the feet of the apostles. They're all gathered in one place. Usually there would be a servant. He would be the lowest of the servants. And it would be his responsibility to wash the feet of the guest. They wore sandals, they dusty roads, feet became very dirty. So it was the responsibility of the lowest of the servants to wash the feet of the guest. So we have the 12 apostles. Judas is there. And we have Jesus. It has not crossed the mind of any one of the 12 to say, I ought to wash their feet. It perhaps crossed their mind to say, where's the servant? Where's the servant that's supposed to wash their feet? But no one stood up to wash the other's feet. And then we read in verse 4, he, Jesus, riseth from supper. He laid aside his garments. He took a towel, just like a servant would, and he girded himself, that is, he prepared himself to serve. After that, he poureth water into a basin. And he began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel wherewith he was girded. Then cometh he to Simon Peter, and Peter said unto him, Lord, dost thou wash my feet? Jesus answered and said unto him, what I do thou knowest not now, but thou shalt know hereafter. Peter said unto him, Thou shalt never wash my feet. Jesus answered, If I wash thee not, thou hast no part with me. Now, there's a lesson there about the daily defilement of sin and how that interferes with fellowship, but that none of that's our point. Simon Peter said unto him, Lord, not my feet only, but wash my hands and my head. That is, Lord, wash me all over. Jesus said unto him, He that is washed all over, that is, he that has been saved, cleansed in the blood of Christ, needeth not to wash again, paraphrasing, save to wash his feet. Why? Because his feet become defiled every day. But is clean every whit, and ye are all clean. That is, in this way, you've been washed completely, saved, but not all. Referring to Judas. For he knew, now we have the explanation of what he means here, but not all. For he knew who should betray him, therefore said he, Ye are not all clean. So after he had washed their feet, and taken his garments, and was sat down again, he said unto them, Know ye what I have done to you? Do you know what I have just done? Do you know what I have just done? Obviously, he washed feet. No, but obviously he did much more than that, or he wouldn't have asked that question. Verse 13, Ye call me Master and Lord, and ye say, Well, for so I am. If I then be your Lord and Master, if I, being Lord and Master, have taken the place of the lowest of servants, and washed your feet, ye also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that ye should do as I have done to you. He was given an example in ministry. But what's amazing about this, one of the amazing things about this, did he not also wash the feet of Judas? Yes, he did. Did he not know who Judas was? Yes, he did. Did he not know that Judas was going to betray him in just a few hours? Yes, he did. Did he not know that Judas wasn't even saved? Yes, he knew all of that. But he washed his feet anyway. We're to serve one another. Don't get caught up in, well, this person doesn't deserve it. None of them did. Certainly Judas didn't. But Judas even washed the feet, or Jesus even washed the feet of Judas. So, my point is this. We minister to one another, not by trying to rise above one another. You'll never minister to one another doing that. That's why we're to prefer one another. So we minister to one another not by trying to rise higher than one another. That is, it's not a competition, but by stooping lower. No one ever stoops so low as Jesus Christ. And we see here in John 13, who stooped the lowest? The greatest. The Master, the Lord, was willing to stoop the lowest. So how do we minister to one another? We do so by willing to stoop. You will never minister to others if you are not willing to stoop. You may even minister to people and they may take advantage of you, they may use you, they may mistreat you, but that's not why you do it. You minister anyway, you stoop lower, hoping to be a testimony. And this is what Jesus taught, and we'll close. Notice in Matthew 20, this stooping is what the Lord teaches us. Matthew 20, verse 25, But Jesus called them unto him and saith, ye know that the princes of the Gentiles, the rulers of the Gentiles, exercise dominion over them. That is, the rulers exercise dominion over the Gentiles. And they that are great, those that are higher, exercise authority upon them. But it shall not be so among you. But whosoever will be great among you, let him be your minister. And whosoever will be chief among you, let him be your servant. And that's what Jesus was teaching, amongst other things. But that's what Jesus was teaching in John chapter 13. He's saying you have to be willing to stoop in order to serve. And then he gives himself as an example. Even as the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto. You do not join a church for what that church can do for you. Jesus did not come to be ministered unto. It should not be, what can they do for me? It should be, what can I do to help them? Jesus came not to be ministered unto, but to minister and to give his life. And we will not minister unless we are willing to give our life. And that's what we're to be willing to do. We're to be willing to give our life one for another. Then notice in Matthew 23, 11 and 12, and then we will be done. But he that is greatest among you shall be your servant. And whosoever shall exalt himself shall be abased. And he that shall humble himself shall be exalted. Just the opposite of the world's way. Just the opposite. So we are to a church, a body of Christ, is each member is a member one of another. That is, we belong to one another. Well, the church can't tell me what to do. Well, you're wrong on 2 points. Number one, yes, they can. Number two, you've got the wrong attitude completely. We are members one of another. And because we are members one of another, and because we have concern for the body of Christ, we are to serve one another. Now, again, this is not something that you can just go from here and say, I'm going to start doing that. Well, you won't unless your heart is in a condition to do that. And that's why we have to get our heart in a right condition. Keep our heart in a right condition at all times. Because if we don't, we will not be able to minister to one another. We've all experienced it. Somebody has experienced a tragedy in their life. You go to their house. You go to them and you try and you're there to comfort them and you go away, the comforted one. Because they have. You see, just because you're in the midst of a tragedy, that doesn't excuse you. Okay, I'm exempt now. I don't have to minister to them. They have to minister to me. No, you're not exempt. We're to minister to one another. And they do. They minister to those who come and comfort them. And that's why it's so important to keep our heart in that condition. To keep our heart in that condition where we can be an encouragement to one another. Where we can minister to one another. And a church that is able to minister to one another, they are spiritually right. And being spiritually right, they are going to be blessed of God, and it's just going to be a wonderful place to be because it's spiritually right. And that's the foundation. The foundation is to be spiritually right. And if we're spiritually right, all of these other things take care of themselves. Brother Tim, if you'd come and lead us.